Hibbard comes home. The pitch swung on and missed. The throw to second is in time. It's a strike him out, throw him out.
Kick it out left corner. DeAndre wide open for three. He hit it again.
Raider going deep over the middle. Caught. Rucker across midfield, and he's going to take it all the way to the house. 79 yards.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast, the A-State podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, a huge week for A-State athletics. Men's basketball wins a multi-team event. Women's basketball leaves the country and wins a tournament. Volleyball's headed to the NCAA tournament. But with all that, we're going to start with football. For the third straight season and for the 13th time in A-State history, the Red Wolves are going bowling. A-State able to defeat Appalachian State Saturday in Boone, North Carolina, 30-29. Kenyon Clay with a game-winning touchdown run with 42 seconds to go to give the Red Wolves their sixth win of the year. Here to talk about it, A-State and Sun Belt Conference all-time leader in career receiving yards at senior wideout, Corey Rucker. How you doing, Ruck?
I'm good. Really blessed.
I got to tell you, you're making history just by being here right now. You're the first two-time player guest on the Second to None podcast. We thought it was worth it with you.
Well, I appreciate it.
You're used to making history. We'll get into all that kind of stuff here in a minute. I do want to start, though, with the game itself on Saturday and just everything, all the emotions, everything that played out in Boone. You see the emotion after the game, and you and I were talking about it even before we started recording. I don't want to hear from anybody about how bowl games don't mean anything, because to go three straight years is a big deal. And you could tell that you guys left everything on the field on Saturday in Boone. So before we get into the details of the game itself, I just want to hear your emotions. How did that feel Saturday coming out of there knowing you were going back to a bowl game?
I mean, it felt really good. It meant a lot because we talked about it all week. It was do or die. We was in a one-game playoff. And when it came down to it, we knew we got an opportunity to get the ball back and go down and score. And we did what we did best was our two-minute drill. We got down there, we scored, and I was overcome with so much emotion. And I was really excited, though, because my career was about to end on a drop slant. And just to have more life on that last drive, to be able to make a big-time catch to set us up for a game with a field goal, and then to come back for another game and have an opportunity to build on it. So it just meant the world to me.
At some point, I'm just like, why don't we just put, you know, a minute and a half, 2 minutes on the clock, give us the ball. Like, I don't know why we got to waste the other 58 minutes, because it's where – like, it's where we're headed. It's got to be just like, okay, here we go. This is what games come down to every time.
Yeah, that's the funny thing about it. Everybody always talks about the cardiac Red Wolves, and we make jokes about it on the bus all the time. That's probably one of our favorite running jokes right now.
The cardiac pack.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go through the game, because the game itself, it just seemed like it took a while to kind of get going. It's 13-3. It's late in the first half, and all of a sudden, the offense kind of comes alive at the end of the half.
Second and four from the 8 for the Red Wolves. Spencer in the backfield with Jalen Rayner. Throw it over the middle. Caught! Back of the end zone. Touchdown, Corey Rucker, the 25th of his A-State career. And the Red Wolves are back to within one score with 1:33 remaining in the opening half.
It's 13-9 at that point after a missed extra point, but then they muff the kickoff, and three plays later, Tyler Fortenberry scores, and all of a sudden you're up 16-13. It's tied at 16 at the half. You get down again in the second half. You guys just keep fighting. You're able to score a touchdown on the crossing route. You're able to get in and tie it up at 23, which was your 26th career touchdown, tying Omar Bayless for the school record.
Rayner steps up, throws left side. This is caught, and Corey Rucker is into the end zone for his second touchdown today, and he has tied Omar Bayless for the most touchdowns in A-State history.
How did that feel?
It was great. I thought about it all year because I hadn't scored since SEMO, and I was thinking to myself, I was like, that's probably one I'm going to let get away, that one record I'm going to let get away. But when I got in the end zone, it felt great. I don't know if y'all saw, but like on the first one, I caught the ball and just stood there because it had been so long since I scored. I didn't know what to do. I just stood there. But I was really excited that we found ways to get our offense back rolling. I mean, most of the time we were just shooting ourselves in the foot with the pre-snap penalties and just MAs, misassignments, and we finally got it together and just got the offense rolling.
They still come back and take the lead again. They hit two field goals in the fourth quarter. Brad mentioned you get the ball back with less than 2 minutes to go. It's a minute 34 to go. You've got no timeouts, 75 yards to go, and yeah, you get a couple of catches by Jalen Benelli. Tyler Fortenberry has the big catch to get you down to the 35, and then just a beautiful ball, a beautiful route. Jalen hits you down the right side for 34 yards, sets up first and goal at the one.
Rainer airing it out, going deep right side for Rucker. Corey makes the catch inside the five, and where are they going to mark him? Corey's down at the one. Rainer to Rucker for 34 yards. It sets up first and goal.
It's kind of crazy because when we do our 2 minute, I'm typically on the left side, and either Hunter Summers or Jalen Benelli is going to be on the right side of the field. And somehow we ended up being flipped. So we got what's called our Mayday menu. So it's 10 plays. We're going to run one of those 10 plays in our 2 minute drill. And that's how we play fast. So I haven't been on the right side all year. So some of the plays are coming in and I'm kind of looking like, I don't really know what I got. And Coach Lett's right there on the sideline talking me through it. And we knew if they press, we're just going to run by them. And I knew Emory Floyd because I played with him at South Carolina. I knew he had a lot of speed. He's a track guy. I was telling Jalen all them, like, it's going to be hard to beat him over the top. And Jalen kind of took that. And when he threw it, he back shouldered me. So I had the opportunity to kind of let Emory run past me and go high point the ball. And it was so funny. Jalen and Heck both came up to me talking about something. Thank God you finally high-pointed the ball, because usually I try to make some crazy catch instead of just going up and doing it regular. But they were so happy that I high-pointed the ball, and it was just – I thought I got in the end zone because when I looked down, I saw the pylon tipped over, but ref marked it on the one, so I was a little hurt by that, but I was happy that Clay was able to punch it in.
So, you know, early in the year when all these games were going down to the wire and one back-to-back one-point games, everybody always say, you know, well, how come you guys just don't run two-minute offense all the time? And Coach addressed it at one point, you know, because he's like, well, because everybody doesn't play two-minute defense all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question would be, why would anybody play two-minute defense against the team that's seemingly always going to score running its two-minute offense?
I think the best thing is that Jalen's a dual threat, so there's certain defenses you can't play because it just gives him the opportunity to just take off and run. And then I think with me, I'm typically to the boundary, and teams try to cloud me over there. So once you cloud me, you leave either the back free on a check down or you give Jalen the opportunity to run up the middle. And that's just how we make our money off of him.
If you did anything wrong on Saturday, it was you scored too quick.
Yeah.
42 seconds left. They had all three of their timeouts, so they had time to go down and get within field goal range. It was a long field goal attempt.
Snap back, hold down. The kick is up. The kick is no good. He missed it right. He missed it right. And the Red Wolves have won it.
This is the end of the game.
A-State able to come from behind in the final minute, and they have won it by the final score of 30-29, and the Red Wolves are bowl eligible for a third consecutive year.
Take me through that moment when you realized he missed the field goal.
It was funny because I'm walking down with the defense to kind of help cheer and make some noise, but then I got to a point like, I can't watch. So I turn, and I'm walking away from the play, and like I'm not really looking, and then last second I turn as he kicked. It's kind of hard to see from the sideline because you can't tell the ball, like which side of the upright the ball passes through. And I just saw everybody else take off, and I was like, there's no shot he missed it. So it was a crazy moment.
What was crazy was we're sitting right there at the top of the bleachers in our booth, and the fans in front of us start cheering. Like they thought, the app fans thought it was good. And I don't know if you noticed this, they shot off fireworks. Somebody, whoever was in charge of, and you can hear it during the playback, you listen to our call, you hear fireworks going off in the background. somebody shot those off a little premature there because fireworks were going off as we won the game. So
that's crazy. I didn't know that.
Well, yeah. Let me ask you boys a question who were there in person, because the reason we had a chance to run 2-minute offense and go take the lead is because they got a touchdown called back that was going to end the game. Mm-hmm. Now, TV missed the penalty altogether. So you're watching TV broadcast, didn't know was it illegal formation or whatever the
illegal
call was.
Formation.
Like, yep. they didn't have it on TV. So in person, in real time, did you guys know that touchdown right away didn't count?
When I saw the tight end catch the ball, because typically when I watch from the sideline, I watch the Jumbotron. It's the easiest view. So I saw him catch the ball. I just kind of dropped my head. As I'm sitting over there in front of the heater, I just dropped my head, and I was like, well, that's the end of my career. And then I just kind of hear, I believe it was Cam Thomas, one of our running backs. He was like, Ruck, we got more life. We got more life. And I looked up and realized that it was an illegal formation. So,
yeah.
What about you guys, man?
Well, it was the right call. And Grizz explained it on the broadcast. I mean, the tight end was not covered there, and he caught the ball in the back of the end zone. Well, I'm watching the ball. I call the touchdown. And then you look up afterwards, and, yeah, the line judge on the far side of the field had thrown the flag that it was a legal formation. So, yeah, I was the same as you, Ruck. I thought that they had won the game and the season was over. But, yeah, fortunately, they got the call right.
It was really, really confusing.
Yeah.
To watch on television because they'd missed it all together. Like, uh-oh. Even then when they thought there was a penalty, they thought it was a celebration penalty. And, like it was a bit of a cluster, to be honest with you.
To win it on the last play, though, after losing on the final play back-to-back weeks, I mean, you talk about the cardiac pack, but, I mean, that resilience that this team has shown. You got to remember, I mean, this team was 1-4 at mm-hmm. one point. You roll off 4 straight. You get in the mix for the division, and then you lose those back-to-back heartbreakers. It would be easy for a lot of teams to just mail it in, but it does show a lot, tell you a lot about the character of this team that you're able to bounce back and win on the road the way you did.
Yeah, because one of the components in our DNA is one's composure, the other is resilience. So just staying the course, not letting things get too high or too low. And Coach talks about it all the time. You know, we play to a standard and not a scoreboard. So we just go out there and just keep playing our ball. And eventually, he said, if you play hard, the ball will bounce your way. And that's what happened in this past game.
3 straight road wins, right, to close out the regular season?
First time since 2015 A-State team has done that.
Coach made that a point, too. He was like, when was the last time that we actually got on the plane and went and beat a quality opponent? And we've been able to do that multiple times this year.
Yeah, I mean, South Al, Troy, now to win at Appalachian State, those are 3 really, really mm-hmm. good road wins. You know, I was anticipating us winning the game. I sat down before the game, and I've never really done anything like this before, but they boast about it in their notes, their game notes, and mm-hmm. they should. I mean, it's a big deal. Going into that game, since 2003, App State was 126-25 home since 2003, over 100 games over 500. So I went back in their media guide and I looked at every single home loss and who beat them. Now, a lot of them were in FCS playoff games mm-hmm. back when they were still in the FCS. They really hadn't lost a whole lot of regular season home games over the years, but it was really neat. I mean, going into the game, Georgia Southern and Coastal were the only teams that had beat them multiple times during that stretch. And now that the Red Wolves have won in Boone, they're 1 of 3 teams to win multiple games in Boone since 2003, and they're the only 1 of those 3 teams that have a winning record in Boone. That's pretty cool to say.
Yeah, that is.
That's a tough place to play, and you see why, I mean, with that right. environment.
Yeah, I saw it my freshman year when we went there. It is a really tough place to play.
Yeah, it was a little bit different back then.
We
were there. It was COVID back then. And they had everybody spread apart, and I mean, I don't know.
It still got a little loud out there, though.
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea, customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same. You first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
We continue to visit with Corey Rucker here on the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and by the Cavanaugh Auto Group. Check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. You mentioned three straight road wins, being able to get on the plane and come back. That's a pretty cool feeling, and I know there was video put out. Of course, I'm on the plane, too. I'm listening to this, and I'm kind of towards the back. I later realized it was you and Jalen up there. You're playing music on the plane ride back. How cool is that to be able to do?
It was really fun, and I was about to go to sleep. I had put my headphones on, and Ms. Rachel comes and tapped me on my shoulder, and she was like, as soon as the plane levels out, you're doing karaoke. And I looked at her, and I'm like, what makes it me? Like, why do I have to be the person to start it off? She said, well, your personality. So as soon as the plane levels out, go up there and get it rolling. So I asked Jalen for a speaker. I got a speaker. And then once the flight attendant said we was good to go, I kind of got it rolling. And the guys just kind of joined in from there.
You know, I love the relationship with you and Jalen. And you talked about it during your postgame interview. You said, look, we're not always on the same page, but we find a way to work it out. Mm-hmm. And you guys are just such a good combination. I love the fact that you were telling us before we started recording, you and Jalen and Chauncey Cobb all went out to brunch Sunday. And I'm sure it was fun to sit there with those guys and kind of reminisce a little bit.
Oh, yeah, it was. And funny you say that, too. Jalen and Chauncey, they were both talking about, they said, they don't know how to feel when I leave. They was like, I can't imagine Jonesboro without you, because once since they got here, that's all they've known. And it was just funny to think about it, and it kind of made me think, I don't know how I'm going to feel without Jonesboro. So it was funny just to have that little moment to kind of reflect on what we have.
When you are an elite receiver, and I can say that because you clearly are one of those.
Appreciate it.
How hard to wrap your arms around the notion that even if you're not putting up numbers, you're helping the team just by the amount of attention you draw? It's easy to say, right? But how hard is it to really kind of grasp, okay, like, I'm doing my job even if they can't throw it at me?
I think it's a lot easier to kind of grasp it when you're not playing. Like, after the game, watching is like, okay, I pulled this many defenders or made them do this defensively. But during the game, like, as a receiver, you want the ball all the time. Like, I want the ball. I need the ball. So it's kind of hard to wrap my head around it during the game. But after the game, it's pretty easy to kind of sit back.
It's funny. Yeah, you have to go and watch the film, because at game speed, right, you're just like every other receiver. You've never not been open.
Right. Yeah. Hey, I'm trying to tell you. Yeah.
We talked about Omar Bayless mm-hmm. earlier. You mentioned during your post-game interview the other day that, hey, we need to be a little selective about who gets number 7 from now on. You guys are now tied for the all-time lead in career touchdown catches. Obviously, the Dallas Cowboys, number 88, is kind of a special number. They only give it to their very best receivers. And I guess we could make number 7 that kind of thing around here.
Yeah.
At A-State, right?
Yeah, kind of like with South Al with the number 5. Like, whoever their player of the game is, the following week, they get the honor of wearing number 5, or like LSU with number 7. So I've been in Butch ear a lot about it, trying to find some stipulations to go with that 7.
When they were recruiting you, Omar was here. And then, you know, you play behind Jay. You as a freshman, you watch him. So, like, you know the dudes that have come through here in that receiver's room. So,
oh, yeah.
You have a good perspective of what it means to have more numbers than – all those guys.
Yeah, it's a pretty big deal, especially like the guys you named, Kirk Merritt, Omar Bayless, Jay Adams. Like, obviously, Jay and Omar both ended up with Players of the Year in the Sun Belt. So, like, obviously, like, very talented guys.
You mentioned the comments that Jalen and Chauncey made, and they can't imagine Jonesboro without you. What I love about you, one of the many things I love about you, Corey Rucker, is the fact that, yeah, this fan base loves you for good reason, but you love it right back. You're going to be there at sporting events. You're going to have your camera with you. And, you know, we'll get into the photography when we can here as well. But it's a passion of yours. But you love just being part of Arkansas State University. And I can tell every time you're around that you're extremely passionate about your school. I mean, this is your school and you're proud of it.
Yes, sir. I mean, one of the best things you could do is make a place better, like leave a place better than what you found it. And that's one thing I've been trying to do, just trying to get everybody on the same page collectively, just other organizations supporting other organizations, you know, just trying to be the best I can be for not only my teammates, but obviously the community around me.
You leaving a year now is a blip on the radar because of the career you've had here. People honestly can forget you left for a year. So there's no sense in talking a lot about it except for this. How long were you gone before you realized, I want to go back to Jonesboro?
I was probably there for 2 weeks before I text Butch. It was probably like a two-week stretch before I text him. And then obviously, like, I had the season in the injury. So anytime, like, we had an away game and, like, A-State had a home game, I was in Jonesboro. And I can't remember who it was, but somebody made the comment. It was like, dang, dude, you be in Arkansas more than you be in Carolina. And I think it's just that element of home. Just you going to always revert back to what you love.
So after the bowl game, obviously, you start getting ready for the NFL draft. So kind of take me through your plans these next few months as you do that.
Yeah, so obviously still waiting to figure out exactly when our bowl game is, but after that, I'm going to go through the heartbreak of packing up my room and taking everything back home. But after I do that, I'm going to go to Frisco to train and then just kind of go through the draft process and hopefully get some type of Senior Bowl invite, Scrimmage Bowl, and be able to put my talents on display, combine, and come back for Pro Day and try to put on a show.
There's not a spot for the active FBS receiving leader in one of these games that I don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, I'm going to be scratching my head on that one, too. So I'd expect that invite.
Yeah, well, I got my fingers crossed.
How's it going to be saying goodbye to Coach Jones?
Ooh, that's going to be a tough one. Because after the game, he looked at me, and it's very few times I've seen Coach emotional. He hugged me, and he started crying. And I was like, one, I got Butch to cry. But two, I don't know. That's going to be a tough one because I remember the very first day I met him and he just instantly started coaching me. And I think that's where our relationship started. And I don't know what he's going to do without me and I don't know what I'm going to do without him.
Do a little deeper dive into he immediately started coaching you.
Yeah, so I came up to the facility. I think I was just grabbing something out my locker. I was about to head back home to Mississippi for the holiday break. And I'm walking by, and I poke my head in to say what's up to him. It's me and Jeff Foreman. I poke my head in to say what's up to him, just introduce myself. And he was like, get in your receiver stance. And I kind of look at him, like, just kind of confused. And he's like, go ahead, get in your receiver stance. So I get in my stance, and he says, oh, you've been robbed. No one has coached you. And he was like, when you get in your receiver stance, you want to get low. You got to be running ready. So that was our first interaction of him correcting my receiver stance.
We mentioned saying goodbye. Obviously, you're going to say goodbye because you're going to go get ready for the NFL draft.
Right.
But he's already made it known that you have a spot back here if and when you want to come back.
Yeah, well, that's something we talked about a lot. He always says, like, do you want to be my graphics guy? And I'm like, oh, of course I'll come work for you. And it was funny because, like I said, we talked about the jersey number. And I was like, Coach, who's going to wear number 7 next year? And he was like, don't worry about it. When you come back and do graphics for me, you'll be the first creative media guy to have a jersey number. And we kind of laughed about that. That was super funny to me. But, yeah, I don't know. I think once football is over, like, that's definitely, like, my passion and the route I want to go down. So if he's giving me an opportunity, I'll take it.
One thing I've loved about this year is the fact that, I mean, there's been such a culture built here with Coach Jones, and you're a big part of it. But Justin Parks and Zach Wallace, who were such a huge part of that team that won the bowl game last year and won 8 games, they were a huge part of it as well. And they're still around. Zach in the strength and conditioning program. And then Justin wasn't here at the beginning of the season, but he was hired back. And look, just his presence seems to make such a difference. And to be able to kind of talk to so many of these guys, especially the newcomers, about the way things are done around here, you have to see the kind of impact that those guys have made, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then, like, you talk about in the weight room, we got Zach. And Zach, he was just in our shoes last year, so he understands, and it gives an opportunity for all the new players. Like, but 72 new transfers, that's a lot of new people that kind of don't understand the way we do things. And we do things differently here, especially, like, down there in the weight room. So just to have somebody that was just in their shoes to kind of explain to them, okay, this does work, or, like, it ain't like we're not messed up with what you're telling you to do. So to kind of have that element to it, it helped a lot of guys. And then when Justin Parks came back, I say since Justin came back, that's when our defense like really stepped it up. And he took a lot of guys aside and held like individual meetings, just coaching guys, because he's one of the smartest people I know when it comes to football. So just having both of them has been like really good. And like Justin, he's our culture setter. Like he did it the whole time he was here. And just to come back and he pulls the freshmen aside for freshman meeting. And a lot of them get mad and like, they don't understand why Justin always wants to meet. But he wants the best for this program and for this team. And he loves it with all his heart. So it's good to have those two guys there.
Bounce back to the photography just a second. So you mentioned, you know, you could slide right in and take pictures and make graphics for the football program. But what's your favorite thing to photograph?
Probably sports, just because – it was funny. I can't remember who I was telling, but you don't have to have true human interaction when you do the sports, because it's people out there just being natural. They're being themselves, just playing their game. And I think that's what makes it fun, is because like people don't know that I'm taking pictures of them. And it's kind of a surprise element for them when I send them the pictures, versus if I set up a shoot with somebody, it's me and them kind of guiding them through the shoot and I have to coach them through it. But if they're doing sports, then I just kind of – they get to be themselves, and I get to capture those moments.
The other thing that's interesting, because I was a newspaper guy in former life, so maybe people don't realize, is if you're standing there and you're serious about – you're shooting a game and you're serious about trying to shoot it from a photography standpoint, you're not really watching the game. You might not even know what's happening because you're going after the photo.
Exactly. One time I got hit with a basketball on the baseline because I wasn't watching, kind of taking an off-ball shot. But there's times where I'll go and sit up in the stands so I can watch a bit of the game. But for the most part, you're right. You're not watching the game because you're trying to get those shots.
We talked about all the records. I know I asked you this at the coach's show several weeks ago, but I'll ask you again here. I mean, with all the records, and you've added on to it now, A-State all-time leader, Sun Belt Conference all-time leader in career receiving yards. I know you'd love to be all alone on top of the touchdown list. You'd love to break Omar's record in the bowl game, but your favorite of those records. And I'll add one more, that single game receiving yards record in school history back as a freshman, which was also the NCAA freshman record for receiving yards in a single game with 310 against ULM. Brad and I get an assist for the last 30 of those. We've talked about that before. But your favorite of those records?
It's tough to choose because, I mean, they're all great. But probably the 310 game, because it's a game that we did win, versus every other record have come up in losses. So I'd say the 310 game for sure. And partially because I called my shot. We had a defensive coach, Ethan Morris, like when I found out I was getting the starting role that week, he came up and just kind of jokingly asked me, he was like, what kind of numbers you going to have? And I think I told him something like 13 for like 240 and three tuds. Now, obviously, I ended up exceeding that, but I'd say probably that one because we won and I kind of called my shot.
The best catch of your career?
I'd probably say Tulsa 2021, James Blackman threw me a slot fade, and I kind of caught it like falling backwards, almost into a backflip. So I'd probably say that's probably my best catch of my career.
Okay. You still have some goals to reach. You're 45 yards away from 4,000 in your career. If you do that, you'd be the 24th player in NCAA history to get to 4,000. That'd be cool.
That would be. That would be big time.
And again, a chance to break Omar's school record for touchdown catches in a career in the bowl game. But I know as much as that, you want to go out with a win. You want to finish your senior season with a winning record.
Oh, yeah, because that's going to be with me forever. So to go out with a win and get a ring, that's exactly what I want to do. That would be big time.
Obviously, people listen, this comes out on Tuesday, so chances are they're listed at a point where they have no clue what bowl game it is. And I could tell you, you know, people are going to spend all week asking what bowl game you're going to. I have no idea. And it's because it's a bigger crapshoot than ever. Matt and I go back long enough to where you kind of you knew the games in play and you knew the order they were picking in and all this and that, and none of that matters anymore. Nope. So with all that said, do you have a game you want to go to?
That's funny. Me and Matt was talking about that before. Anywhere that's not in Alabama. I just don't want to go back to Alabama.
No offense to the fine folks of Alabama. Just, it's been there a lot.
It's cool, but I've been there way too many times in the past 2 years.
I'll have Corey's back on this because I'm with him. We love everybody in Mobile. We love everybody in Montgomery, but it'd be nice to go to a different spot.
See something different. Just, you know, get a new view.
All right. We'll find out really soon where the Red Wolves will be heading, but the bottom line is you get to play in one more game.
Yeah, that's the exciting part. Yeah, at the end of the day, it's another game, another opportunity to win a championship. So that's what I'm most excited about.
Well, Corey, I think I can speak for a whole lot of people when I say it's been a whole lot of fun watching you. I got the privilege of calling every one of your plays, and man, what a thrill that's been. So congratulations on a great career.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it.
That's KevinNowCars.com. Just cars to see and SUVs. All types are there. Rides everywhere. New and pre-owned. There's just to own.
Just shop online. There you will find your perfect match is always at.
All types are there. Rides everywhere. New and pre-owned. There's just to own.
Baby, they are Chevy and Lord. Hyundai, Kia, Ford. All you can afford. KevinNowCars.com.
And we welcome you back into the Second to None podcast presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Let's talk volleyball.
Let's do it.
The Sunbelt champs now know where they're headed for the NCAA tournament. Selection show was held on Sunday night, and when it was revealed where the Red Wolves were going, you saw the celebration on ESPN and
yeah,
with the big crowd there at Centennial Bank Stadium. But Brian Gerwig's team taking on Baylor at 3:30 Thursday afternoon in West Lafayette, Indiana.
Well, first things, if you watch that show, Arkansas State won the watch party.
I agree. Absolutely. Nobody had as many people in the shot as Arkansas State did.
In fact, it was kind of entertaining watching our players react to some of those shots, because, you know, a lot of those shots would just show just the players sitting there, and some of them were kind of sad looking, to be honest with you, because they knew what the room they were sitting in and how many people they had behind them that had come to see where they were going. So shout out to the fans for helping us. They're already 1-0, won the watch party, and
national champs in the watch party.
Now gonna try to keep it going in West Lafayette, Indiana, against Baylor Thursday afternoon.
Yeah, Baylor's the sixth seed in the region. And you and I were talking about, you know, why they don't seed, I guess, the 9 through 16 teams in each bracket or each region. What it essentially comes out to is, if you compare it to the basketball tournament, a 6-11 matchup. So that kind of tells you just how well thought of A-State volleyball is this year with their strength of schedule and what they were able to do in a very tough Sun Belt conference.
Yeah, and that schedule, he put them up against early. You know, we talked a lot about, and he's talked a lot about that. I mean, it's the hardest schedule he's ever built for a team. And, you know, they fared well against that schedule, the multiple wins against the SEC and the ranked win, and, you know, right on down the line. And, you know, even right on to the conference tournament. Remember, I mean, didn't just get the automatic bid. We got the automatic bid, and our RPI went way up because we got two top 50 wins in the semifinals and the finals. So they were well positioned to get, yeah, what amounts to an 11 seed. You know, I love it for this team because, again, I always want this team as an underdog.
Sure.
They love it. They love it. And so I hope everybody across the country is watching that bracket come out and talking about Purdue versus Baylor in the second round.
Let's switch to men's hoops. Good week for the men. They defeated Jacksonville State 74-63. That was the first game of the multi-team event that the Red Wolves hosted this past week. But yeah, 74-63 over Jacksonville State in a game in which they led by 6 at the half and then started the second half on an 11-0 run. But all anybody really was talking about at the end of this one was, you know, the final minute, it got a little chippy. There were a couple of replay reviews at the end. Then three fans ended up getting ejected from the game. And I love Coach Pannone's reaction afterwards. He talked about it in his post-game visit with me. He said, look, I love the passion from our fans. I want them to keep on bringing it.
Yes,
so
he did.
He talked about it. I know the players were kind of fired up about it as well. And you got to remember, that's just the second home game that he's coached. So to see that and to see how our fans get into it as much as they do during the stretch, I'm sure was pretty encouraging.
Yeah, I got a kick out of hearing him be so intentional about saying that in this post game with you, that he appreciated the fans show a fight for the team, and because the team wants to go show fight for the fans. And so that was cool to see. And, then I thought, honestly, and I'm really not surprised. I thought, given the circumstances, I thought there were a decent number of folks who came Wednesday at 2 o'clock to randomly watch Jack State and North Dakota State.
Yeah, North Dakota State ended up winning that game. They beat Jacksonville State by 13.
Yeah, and so they looked good. I mean, we knew watching that game that we had our hands full Friday. You could tell, just like you knew we were going to have our hands full Monday. It's a good thing about that MTE is that all three of those teams were really comparable to one another and all very near each other in the net rankings coming into last week. So you knew no matter what, you were getting two good games.
Yeah, and it's hard to compare, especially in Arkansas State's case, last year's team to this year's team, because the Red Wolves have 100% turnover. But if you just look at the peer programs, A-State had won 25 games last year. Jacksonville State had won 23, and North Dakota State had won 21. So three teams that had won over 20 games the season before. So these are really good programs, and North Dakota State was off to a 5-2 start. And look, they got off to a great start in that game. Yeah. Friday. It was 20-8 coming out of the second media timeout, and you're thinking, man, this team's really good. Yeah. We're really going to have to dig in here. But I thought our guys really rebounded after that, ended up winning the game 85-80 in overtime, a game that saw 13 ties and 17 lead changes. And as impressive as anything, you go back to the SMU game, and I don't want to go back to it much, but I think it's a good measuring stick to just see how far this team's come in a short amount of time. Red Wolves turned it over 32 times against SMU. Well, North Dakota State was 8th in the country at forcing turnovers and top 5 in the nation in turnover margin. And the Red Wolves, in a game that lasted 45 minutes, only turned it over 11 times and were plus 1 in the turnover margin. And that was 1 week to the day from the SMU game. So they've come a long way at protecting the basketball in a short amount of time.
Yeah, that was just a good, really both those games. I mean, even Monday night was a good, entertaining ball game, physical ball game. Really not surprised it got a little chippy at the end because it was a physical game. Friday, same thing, good ball game, entertaining, and obviously didn't get overtime to boot. And shout out to the fans that showed up because, I mean, I forgot all about it being Friday afternoon at 2 o'clock.
Black Friday.
That crowd, because it was a nice crowd there to watch, just like a normal crowd.
Yeah,
there to watch that game, and so they were entertained and got a chance to make a lot of racket coming down the stretch. So yeah, fun week. And then one story before we shift off the men in that Wednesday game, I was able to use it a little bit as a test lab because I knew the crowd would be smaller, and also I was short staffed because so many students. We lean on some of these students, and they're gone home for the week. So Will Chamberlain, my assistant, we call him DJ Ill Will when he's in charge of playing the music. So we had DJ Ill Will playing the music for the game Wednesday. We wanted to still do some in-game type stuff. We didn't have to. It was two teams that were from far off. We still wanted to do something to bust up the monotony. So we played a couple of games and some timeouts. I knew I was going to be in charge of kind of having to get the stuff out to do them. So we had a 12-year-old in-game host for a couple of the timeouts.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure I know this guy pretty well.
You do. And so at one point in the last timeout, we did something on Wednesday. We did the Dress Like a Ball Player contest where two kids had to go put on the big shorts, the big jersey, and even this time the really big shoes, and then go get a ball and race back. So you had my 12-year-old is on the mic hosting the timeout. My 10-year-old had to be in the race because we were short on kids. And all I was doing was just the guy out there putting the stuff out. Now, my wife is sitting there, and she had one job. Get this on video.
Don't tell me. She missed it?
She took one still photo of it and spent the rest of the time with her phone, pointing her phone at, thinking she was shooting video.
Oh my goodness!
Got home to watch it. Yeah, she'd taken one photo. So I really wanted to just be able to tell that story to bust on her a little bit. But yeah, it was fun, and like I said, good crowd on Wednesday considering. And I really appreciated the crowd that came out on Friday. I mean, honestly, it was a good like measuring stick that if we're ever at home again on Black Friday, we'll tip off at 2 p.m. It didn't seem to impact things at all.
The men now 5-3 on the year. They're going to host another good team Tuesday night as this podcast comes out on Tuesday. If you're listening, make plans to be out there at 7 o'clock. Final home game before Christmas for the men as they take on UTA, former Sun Belt foe. But, yeah, this will be a big challenge Tuesday night. And then they'll begin a four-game road swing Saturday. Tip-off will be a little after 8 o'clock as the Red Wolves play at Little Rock.
And if you're listening to this before this game on Tuesday night, then come on out. Be there when the doors open because we have 1,000 Christmas tree ornaments we're giving away.
Yeah, and you said they came out really good.
They did. Right? You probably have seen them maybe on social media by this point. But, yeah, they look good, and we'll give those out to the first 1,000 when they open the doors Tuesday night.
All right, let's talk about the women. What a week they had. My goodness. They went down to the Bahamas, turned a whole lot of heads. They won the Baja Mar Hoops Nassau Championship. They defeated a Power 4 opponent on Friday and didn't just beat them. I mean, they hammered them. They beat Houston 83-66, a game in which they led 33-15 after the first quarter and went on to force a school record 38 turnovers. What a win.
Yeah. Second straight year to beat a Big 12 team. You know, they won out at Arizona State last year.
Yeah, you called that one.
I did, yeah. It was a lot of fun. 100-96.
Yeah, what a victory over Houston. And then that victory put them in the championship game of the tournament on Sunday, and the Red Wolves won again, 74-54 over Kent State.
You know, we've talked about this team early on, and I loved listening to Dez after the game on Sunday because she's so candid. And she, you know, talked about, she goes, I know people get tired of hearing it, but when you bring in a number of new kids, even though they had 5 returners, but when you play the way we play, and it's so different, I know people get tired of hearing it, but it's going to take time.
Yeah.
And she said, this is the trip we needed. And I think if this team goes on to do the things we want to do, they'll look back at this weekend in the Bahamas as kind of the turning point. You mentioned 33-16 or 33-15 leading Houston after one. They led Kent State 33-16 after one.
Man.
A team that's, you know, kind of gotten off to some slow starts. And so you look at it this way. You know, more times than not, almost every night, they're going to have more in the tank in the fourth quarter because of the way they play with the constant subbing. So now all of a sudden, if they come out playing like that in the first quarter,
yeah,
and you know they're going to have more juice than you in the fourth, that just leaves you the second and third quarter. You know, like, and so Sunday's a good example of this. Kent State got back in this game. I don't know. They got to at least 10 early in the third quarter, and they might have gotten closer because I got mad and quit listening. But I know they got to 10. They got to the fourth quarter, held them to 3 points.
Wow.
Ended up winning by 20.
They can finish strong with their depth and the way they play. Zion Shannon, another big reason why the Red Wolves won that tournament. She won tournament MVP. And now you get to see this team a couple of times this week. They'll be on the home floor Wednesday at 7 against Florida Gulf Coast. I heard Coach Dez in her post game talking about the challenge there. This is a good Florida Gulf Coast team.
Always good.
Coming in on Wednesday. And then home again Saturday at 2 against Tennessee Martin.
Another always good. It's just two really good mid-major programs coming in here this week.
So for our super ambitious fans, they can go to the women's game at 2 Saturday afternoon at home and then hop in the car and drive down to the Stevens Center in Little Rock and catch the men's game, which will tip off a little after 8.
Come on.
And get dinner in between.
I'd encourage people to do both those things. But yeah, it's a good home schedule this week, and the men's game down in Little Rock at late tip makes it possible to see all the action.
Yeah,
you can watch 4 basketball games this week.
Little Rock, I guess, still hasn't learned that you can't start a women's game at 6 and put the men's game down for an 8 o'clock tip-off.
Is that the deal?
Yeah, that's the
deal. 6 o'clock?
6 o'clock.
On Saturday?
On Saturday. You know, you're looking at probably an 8:15 to 8:30-ish start time in actuality.
You plan a doubleheader on Saturday.
Right.
And you choose to start at 6 o'clock.
Correct.
That's a choice.
It is a choice. So that's what we're dealing with. But looking forward to a big week for both the men and women. They're both playing really well.
Yeah.
Each team sitting at 5-3 to begin the season.
I mean, honestly, I mean, you go back and look, and you back it up a week to a Sunday. You know, from a Sunday to a Sunday, you had volleyball win the Sun Belt Tournament Championship. Men's basketball win two games at its home MTE. Women's basketball win their tournament in the Bahamas. Football win to get bowl eligible. And then back to the next Sunday where the women find out they're essentially an 11 seed in the first round of the NCAA tournament. It was a heck of a week for the Red Wolves.
Yeah, I don't know how many weeks we've had better than this period, but it was certainly a banner week and a lot to brag on. Anything else you want to mention here?
Nope, just that. Thanks to all the fans. Again, from the watch party to the men's basketball home games. And so let's just keep it rolling with three basketball games at the bank this week.
Loved our visit with Corey. Thanks to Corey Rucker for coming in. Just one of our all-time favorites.
Yep.
And going to miss him wearing that number 7 for the Red Wolves. But he's going to go on to do big things. And the good news is we get to watch him play one more time.
And with that said, I will direct people to astateredwolves.com/bowlcentral. You can get whatever information we've got and, you know, put down and maybe the game you're interested in attending. You know, we'll know by Sunday. You say by Sunday because maybe it's before, but I don't think it'd be a lot before.
Anymore,
this
it's
is
usually
a different
Sunday.
Era than kind of what we were used to, you know, 12, 15 years ago when we started this every year. You're going almost irregardless of kind of what you see with bowl tie-ins and this and that. At the end of the day, you want to know what game we're playing in? The one ESPN wants us in.
That's the facts.
And so whatever it is, it is. And there are, I would say, no less than 12 viable options.
Either way, the Red Wolves are going bowling.
That's right.
Somewhere, one of those 12 options. And obviously we'll be all over it once it happens. Thanks again to Corey for coming in. Thanks to Jerry Scott for setting that up for us. For Brad, I'm Matt. Have a great week, everybody.